Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a bowl of butter, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Speller and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
And Luke Moore's here.
All right.
What a thrilling three. It's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
And there is a bowl of butter on the table, Marcus, but don't put your hands in it because of the electronic equipment and all that stuff.
You know? You're damn right, baby. Yeah. You're damn right.
Give it a good wipe down at the end.
Oh, my goodness. More of a butter man than a margarine man, Jim. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's a full house. I'm with you on that.
Well, that was more unanimous than I thought.
No, I'm with you.
I was sweating last night in bed thinking, I wonder if they're more margarine.
Yeah, I don't think anyone prefers margarine. Do they just sort of make do with it if there's no butter?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure we'll hear, but...
I think you're right.
All right,
as ever, answering the big questions.
Shall we talk about dem footballs?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we've covered butter and margarine. Let's go to the football now.
Margarine was comprehensively beaten. Yeah. It didn't show any signs of recovery, unlike West Ham.
Yeah.
In the North East London derby.
I mean, I spent a good part of this season so far saying I mean, it's almost like managers don't listen to me. Saying there's a blueprint there available for teams to do to have a bit of success against Spurs. Mm. Fair to say, Slaven Bilic didn't bother with that.
Well, maybe you can work out how to print it out.
No, maybe
the blueprint to get a result against Spurs is, of course, play them at Wembley. Yeah, and West Ham said, no, play it, yeah, play at our ground.
We've got our own home of football.
Because that's how it works with the fixtures, of course.
We've got loads in common. I'm having a nightmare at our stadium as well.
If it's a recipe for a draw, this one.
When I pointed that out earlier, someone said to me that, you know, it would be a brave manager to set up in that sort of park the bus type style at home in a local derby.
Yes.
To which I responded, well, you can't really even open an Evening Standard newspaper at the moment without seeing that Bilic is going to be chopped anyway.
Yeah.
He's under pressure as it is. Mm. I mean, in a way, in the situation he's in, I think the end would justify the means. People might have a bit of a groan when they saw the team sheet and saw how the team were lining up, but if it meant they got a result out of it, I'm not saying they definitely would, because Spurs are a good team, but if they got a result out of it, some sort of result, presumably the fans would be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be, a few years ago they basically did a number on Chelsea, didn't they, at Upton Park, where playing in a very, very similar way, and the fans were delighted that they ground it out and showed some versatility. But obviously it was a little bit beyond them at the weekend.
It certainly was, yeah. I mean, Bilic did try and mix things up when he threw on Andy Carroll, that was obviously an injury to Antonio.
Certainly mixed things up, didn't
made
he?
An impact.
Yeah.
Made an impact.
Fair to say that the Antonio injury was a big turning point for the game?
It was, because it was not really going anywhere in terms of chances and who was on top. And then suddenly Spurs scored two goals very quickly. Harry Kane is clinical best. I mean, Kane in that match, I know a lot's been said, we all know Harry Kane's a wonderful footballer, but in a game like that, when you see Kane with number 10 on his back, swaggering is the word I'm looking for. The way he took the first goal with the header, and even the second goal, was so calmly rolled into the net. It was utterly glorious.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, roll on the World Cup.
Well, I mean, yeah, we need
stop it.
All we need, I mean, Jimmy's right. All we need is 10 more.
Yeah, and, you know, that's why he's got 10 on his back.
Yeah, we're about 8% of the way there. Right?
Yeah,
I found the, because if you look at the team, the lineups, I thought obviously the front three of Spurs very, very strong, and Kane had a fantastic time of it. Hit the post a couple of times, didn't he, as well? So he could have had four goals. And Eriksen is such a great player. We made the point on the Continent, our European show, about around the time when Barcelona were after Coutinho, we were talking about why weren't they after Eriksen, because probably would be a touch cheaper, is in my view more effective, sort of goes about his business a lot more,
technically very efficient.
Technically, the, you know, one of the best players in the world.
Showed that with the way he took his goal.
Yeah, the precision in that goal was amazing. It was like a threaded through ball that happened to, you know, be aimed at the net.
Yeah, absolutely. What I like about Eriksen, as I said to you, Marcus, at the time, he always seems to make the right decision, always seems to do the right thing. I mean, his record in assists and creating chances is phenomenal. But for me, the standout the interesting sort of narrative around those front three is that Ali, I thought, played a lot better. Mm-hmm. I know a few people I've seen saying that, you know, it was more...
He's had his critics.
He has had his critics this season, and I wonder if that's because he's had his head turned a little bit. Mm. I mean, I read in the newspapers, in the quality newspapers fairly recently, so I think I'm fairly sure it's true that he's now potentially going to move agents. We've seen Raiola sniffing around him and Jorge Mendes sniffing around him. We've seen him in marketing campaigns now. He's definitely focusing on Brandelli, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Probably to the detriment of his performances this season. I was chatting to a Spurs fan friend of mine who was saying, look, I think he might need a bit of a time on the bench just to refocus.
You would think.
Just to finish, it was interesting to see him playing in the League Cup when a lot of the other players were given a night off and he was told to play.
The Carabao Cup,
yeah,
mate.
Sorry, the Carabao Cup, yeah, right. Forgive me, everyone. And that to me, was a bit of a damning indictment of how he started the season. But I actually thought he did a lot better against West Ham.
Well, your weekend, you could do with a sip of Carabao, couldn't
you? I could do, actually.
But surely then, if Dele Alli is needing a bit of time on the bench or whatever was said by Luke's source, Pochettino, you would think, would be the man to manage that, Jim, wouldn't you? Because he tends to get it right, and the vibe at Spurs. I mean, he did say he was in love with Harry Kane, so maybe he's not the right man. I don't know.
I think that's going to fill you with confidence if you're Harry Kane, isn't it?
Here's a question for you, Jim: who's more in love, Pochettino with Harry Kane, or Pep Guardiola with Kevin De Bruyne?
I thought you were going to say Ronald Koeman in the ass. I don't know. I think that's more lust at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's probably not going to last.
That's fleeting.
That is a tryst at best.
That's wrong, but it feels so right.
Yeah. I think I needed that, is what Koeman would have said. Yeah. I think you're equal pegging if you're talking about De Bruyne, Pep Guardiola's love for De Bruyne.
What do you think about the Aurier sending off?
I thought it was mildly amusing. No, I didn't think it was amusing. I thought that the first booking, mind you, it was for persistent fouling.
This is it, yeah. So the first booking was, you know, was because of a number of fouls, and we see those happen. The second one as well was just it was just rash, wasn't it? It was absolutely a booking, the second one.
The second one to me struck me as like he was still annoyed that he had been booked in the first place. Yeah. It's absolutely the wrong way to go about complaining about it. Because the first one, even though you guys said, I didn't watch the entire game in real time because I was away, but you guys pointed out rightly that it was for continual fouling, but I don't even know if I saw the foul in it. It didn't seem like it was one of those. To me, it's like, I don't know that's a foul. So that regardless of what's been going on before, I don't see how you can give a yellow card.
The second one was definitely a booking.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
I did. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think he and Carroll had a bit of a running battle.
You did. Yeah. You changed your mind. What's that? You just scrawn something else in your mouth.
Leave that alone. That's fine.
You shouldn't. You can't throw yourself in like that when you're already on the yellow. No. To me, that's crazy.
You can't.
But on the West Ham side of it, because obviously we can't talk just about Spurs, even though they won the game. West Ham seem to have absolutely no leadership and no sort of direction, because and it's a very fascinating situation purely because that's coming from the very top. The ownership is essentially informing the rest of what's happening at the club.
Yeah, the dildo brothers, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. not putting too fine a point on it. Uh-huh. Yeah, them. They clearly are briefing against Bilic. There's all sorts going on. West Ham pal of mine thinks that as soon as they get an offer for the club, they'll sell it and all the rest of it. And
you've been talking a lot to your pal.
I know. Yeah,
whispers.
They've probably all been talking nonsense.
Yeah. Let's hope you've got.
But it is like crazy how they don't realise that continually doing this stuff only serves to undermine the manager. What you need to do essentially is fire the guy if you don't think he's up to it, or back him. This halfway house isn't going to work for them.
But do you not think they backed him in the summer? They gave him a bit of money. Javier Hernandez was obviously their big signing. Yeah. They've got big Joe Hart between the sticks.
That's a problem as well.
But the point though is that they've done that. You know, stick to that. Don't, you know.
Well, when you say stick to that, I mean,
well, as Luke says, it just there's this air of you know, Bilic has even said himself, when the rumours start that your job's under threat, that's it. It's very, very difficult to come back from it, and that's going to be the narrative for a little while. And they're not really doing much to dispel that, are they?
Yeah, no, that is true.
They've got some. They've got some reasonably winnable fixtures coming up.
Will they take any heart from the fact that they nearly got a point? I mean, when I say nearly got a point, they got back into the game. Yes, Spurs were down to 10 men. I mean, it was 3-1.
Their second goal was a beauty.
Oh, what a satisfying header that was for everybody concerned. Yeah. Oh, delish.
But West Ham at home to Swansea next time out, then they go to Burnley, which I guess is tough, and then they're at home to Brighton. I mean,
they have winnable games coming up, but they need to get some points on the board.
Absolutely, because as things stand, for what this is worth, which is actually nothing, they're in the relegation zone at the moment.
Yeah, indeed. Christian Eriksen, much was made of him becoming the highest scoring Dane in Premier League history with 33 goals, obviously overtaken Nicholas Bentner. It was just nice to hear a mention of his name.
Well, we just talked about how much we rate a young Christian.
Indeed, I was looking at the high scorers from each nationality in the Premier League. Do you know who the highest scoring Scotsman is in the Premier League? Have a guess.
Oof, don't know. Kevin Gallagher.
It's not Kevin Gallagher.
Brian McClair.
Big Duncan Ferguson.
Cool. Okay, great. That makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't think that as well. When I saw his name, I thought, Duncan Disorderly. Lovely to see his name. So there we are. But it was a good win for Spurs nonetheless on the road.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot of factors into why Spurs might not have it all their own way this season. And I believe we've already seen that to an extent. Mm-hmm. But they're still up there. I mean, they're they're fourth on the table. They're not necessarily keeping pace, you would say. But they're not a million miles off, which will be encouraging for them. They're 5 points off the top or something.
Leapfrog Newcastle.
It's worth remembering.
A lot of teams will.
Yeah. It's worth remembering they had a pretty slow start last season and then they went on a blistering run, so they're well capable of doing it again.
Kane is the only Englishman to make it on the 55-man shortlist for the FIFA Pro World 11. I think that's announced next month.
I think we've done well there.
I think we've done incredibly well.
We're making up almost 2% of that league. You're welcome the rest of the world.
Looking good for the World Cup, isn't it, Marcus?
Well, with Harry Kane in the side, well do. But it was just nice to see that an Englishman's made it back on that list again, you know, so hopefully a few more
it's slim pickings, isn't it?
It's very slim pickings, you know.
So I appreciate you looking on the bright side though, mate. I really appreciate that.
That's what I'm doing, man. Alvaro Morata, he crushed Stoke City with his elegant ways, and it was a glorious hat-trick.
It really was.
It was delightful. The first goal, I just thought, oh, you delicious so-and-so.
Naughty boy.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, great ball from Dave, and Azpilicueta, as he's also known. And a superb ball, and Alvaro Morata pulled out wide and then came back in, and as many pundits were saying, it's so hard for defenders, centre-backs, to track the runs of centre-forwards when they do that. You know, Henri was fantastic at that, of course.
That's right.
But the way he took the goal, it was... one could be forgiven for thinking, oh, he took his time there and got his shot away. But the fact is, he had time, and he made use of that time. Yeah. And actually, that in itself shows you the composure of a player like Morata to take the touch and to just calmly stroke it in the corner.
Yeah.
And it was the first of three lovely goals.
I think the second was a good example of that as well, because he showed so much pace and power to get through that defence. But then he slowed down and just sort of really deftly chipped the ball in. It was a perfect use of the time he had. But he had to think very, very quickly there. He really looks like... that was absolutely perfect centre-forward play, that whole game from him, really.
Indeed.
It was perfect.
And spot on.
My initial sort of analysis, which people probably won't, of Morata in the Premier League was that he looked a bit lightweight. We said at the very first round of the season that he looked a bit... I think someone said he was half man, half cloud or something. But what he is actually a very intelligent player.
Yes.
And a very classy player. And he has everything in his locker, as well as a lot of composure and almost like ice in his veins as well. Mm. And we saw that at the weekend. But this whole Premier League top scorer thing will be a really, really great race this year, because you've got Aguero, Morata and Lukaku, all who seem just to be scoring every game in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. They've got six goals each.
Were you forgetting a 55th of the shortlist?
Yeah, quite.
I was about to go on to say, of course, Harry Kane, after his usual sort of inexplicable August blip, is now coming up on the rails, of course. Yeah. So he'll be a part of the conversation. And maybe someone will come on to talk about a little bit more detail in a minute. Is, for me, one of the best attacking players in the Premier League so far this season. Mo Salah, of course.
Mo Salah. Right. Don't forget Gabriel Jesus.
I would never forget him.
Yeah, certainly not.
And Jamie Vardy's got five, by the way.
Yeah, big Vards. Could have had six.
It's an absolutely packed potential list of Premier League top scorers this season, and that's something to be excited about.
No Lacazette?
Not so far, no. He's not in there.
He's got a few.
Yeah, he's got two goals in the Premier League this season.
It's early days, though, isn't it?
Better than one, isn't it? But yeah, Chelsea looked great, didn't they? I mean, they were a little bit fortunate. Marcus Alonso could have been sent off at 2-0, and Stoke had the wind up their sails. But when they managed to weather that storm, they just brushed Stoke aside. And as you were saying, Jim, it was perfect forward play. And for a striker like Morata, when a striker just somehow finds time in front of goal to stroke the ball home. Mm. It's a bit like a midfield player when they receive the ball, and you always think they've always got space and time. Like, I don't know, at times Christian Eriksen, but a great example would be Luka Modric at Real Madrid.
Paul Scholes was a great example of that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Always has space and time. Whereas when a striker gets himself into a position up front, whether it's getting on the end of a long ball like he did with Azpilicueta, or beating a defender and then finding himself in front of the keeper and having the time to steady turn and shoot, that is a sign of a fantastic centre forward.
I mean, a calm head allows you that ruthlessness, doesn't it? I mean, if you're calm and composed in front of goal, that goal is absolutely massive. Do you know what I mean? If you're panicking, then the keeper's massive. That's how it looks, at least.
And looking at the back at Chelsea, just to flip, looking at their sort of rear guard as well, at the start of the season we were talking a bit about how we thought it looked a bit light on numbers, Chelsea, and how we weren't sure if they had enough players in their squad, and defensively they looked a bit short. I mean, Azpilicueta, Christensen and Rudiger played at the back, three at the back against Stoke, looked great. Mm-hmm. And talk in the newspapers today has been that Gary Cahill may not play midweek in the Champions League, and he can't force his way into the team. So they've got a good... I mean, all of a sudden, it's almost like they've got an embarrassment of Richards at the back.
Yeah.
Which, it's so funny how quickly that can change around.
Absolutely right.
They've kept a clean sheet away from home. Stoke, okay, they're not the Stoke of they were a few years ago at home.
Well, they've beaten Arsenal at home this season.
They're an all right team by any stretch. They've got some good players. Chelsea absolutely brushed them aside, as you said. I agree with your point about the 2-0 situation where it could have gone either way. But after that, Chelsea just moved into another gear, and they were able to, more than capable of just casting them aside. Yeah. Mm. And you know, very, very early to be talking about the Premier League title race. I mean, last week you were mentioning how you thought City would take some stopping, and we said, well, you know, it's a long way to go yet. Chelsea are champions, and they're proud of it, and they're going to be very much part of the conversation.
Well, I saw in the media that some were arguing that is there a new little top three developing in the two Manchester clubs and Chelsea. I'd say it was early days, and I think Spurs fans would be disappointed to hear that. But, you know, it could pan out.
Yeah,
like
I mean, they certainly look the three front runners, don't they? We've been talking a lot about how, you know, it's the two Manchester clubs look like the standouts, but have we forgotten about Chelsea because they lost to Burnley?
Well, Chelsea.
Have we been that simple?
I think so, maybe. I mean, Chelsea are 3 points off the two Manchester clubs at the top of the league, and Chelsea have played Spurs and Arsenal. Man City have played Liverpool. They had Mane sent off, and that's.
But the thing is, Marcus, we've got to make the point about Man City, is that people will say, someone will say to you, undoubtedly, oh, Man City haven't really played anyone yet. Mm-hmm. Well, fine. They've played Liverpool, as you just mentioned, fairly there. They have absolutely cast teams aside.
Yeah, blitzed them.
Their results in September, 5-0 against Liverpool, you know, 4-0 against Feyenoord, 6-0 away at Watford, and then beat Crystal Palace 5-0.
Hodgson's Palace,
no less. And the most important thing for Man City, if I may, I know we're talking about Chelsea, but is not that they're scoring so many goals, because they've got so many good forward players. They're not conceding goals.
That's right.
And I don't know if you can necessarily say that many teams, even at the top end of the Premier League, will go through lots of games not conceding.
It becomes about what happens when they do concede at this point, doesn't it? It's how they react to that when eventually, you know, they
probably
do
just score about seven.
Yeah. Well, they conceded at Bournemouth. I mean, they did go a goal down and they got it back just about in injury time. But my point last week, I think it was, is that Manchester City, they won't worry about defending because they're so overwhelmingly good going forward that when you're pressing teams going forward that much, defending is an afterthought. And I think that's what it'll be. And when they play Manchester United, that is the type of game Mourinho loves. He loves stifling very good opposition going
quite,
forward.
But the Palace game, just to sort of expand on that point, they had 72% of the ball against Palace.
They weathered an early storm.
Well, sort of. But they had 72% of the ball. So they didn't really need to worry too much about it, did they? Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's true.
Palace didn't have a shot on target, I don't think. And Palace have got problems because is Benteke injured now?
He is, yeah.
So they've got no recognised striker because Wickham's out and Remy's gone back on Chelsea.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea are up against Atletico Madrid and Manchester City this week. And Thibaut Courtois reckons that they're hitting form at the right time. That is a fascinating one when they play Manchester City, because Chelsea, as we saw when they went away to Wembley at Spurs, are happy to go and defend and play a little bit more cautiously when needs be. Manchester City under Guardiola, a bit like when Guardiola was at Barcelona, they're going to play one way.
Yeah.
One way or another.
They're going to find you. They're going to get you.
They're going to get that 3 points.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Everton got a big 3 points at Goodison Park, and it was Umar Nias, the forgotten man who became unforgotten at Goodison Park. He was signed from Lokomotiv Moscow in January 2016 by Roberto Martinez, and then he was told by Ron Koeman he was surplus to requirements, he wasn't given a squad number, banished from the first team, playing for the under-23s. And this was based on Koeman seeing Nias underperform for a half in a preseason
friendly.
Seems
hasty.
That's what the story says.
Do you think that is the full story, though? Because that does seem incredibly hasty, isn't it? Koeman himself has said pretty much exactly that. There is more to a lot of what people have said.
Can I get confirmation that when Ronald Koeman's ever to win a game, they are 100% guaranteed to be in this show? Can I just get confirmation from you on that? Just so the listeners know where they stand.
And this is about Nias, this is not about Koeman.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, indirectly about Koeman.
It's not your story, this is Omar Nias's story. It needs to be told.
And Koeman is best supporting actor in that story.
Yeah.
Do you know that his kind of isolation was so much the case that he left the ground in an Everton tracksuit because he doesn't actually have a club suit. I hadn't even given him one.
My goodness.
Wow. Okay.
He needs one now.
As we said a few weeks ago, they tried to offload him to Palace and he couldn't agree personal terms, so he ended up going back to Everton. And obviously, it's so funny how things turn around because Koeman's almost all of a sudden he's scratching around trying to get a win. I'll do anything. I'll take anyone on board. But Nias is a player who's never really scored goals in any great number.
Yeah.
And did he go for quite a lot of money to Everton as well?
13.5
Yeah, million. So before transfer fees went ridiculous.
Don't worry.
It was a bit of an eye-catching transfer at the time, wasn't it?
It was.
And he spent a lot of time on loan as well.
He went on loan at Hull, and I think Marcus Silva managed to get a couple of goals out of him there, and he played a bit better under Silva when he came along. But that was a sinking ship. And of course, it sunk to the Championship. It was interesting what Koeman said, because one minute you saw quotes from Koeman saying it was ridiculous that people were questioning my job, and then another quote Koeman was saying, "Well, yeah, he might have saved my job or something."
Right.
But what's
Koeman going to do though? Because you look at the team he played against Bournemouth, and obviously Nias came on and saved their day. Really, I mean, they were obviously a goal down. I don't know what he's going to do because Nias is a striker. He doesn't start him. He starts three players who arguably aren't really out and out strikers at the moment up front. It seemed like he was trying to be almost like too clever. Mm-hmm. It didn't really work for them. And you think, well, if he signed Sandro Ramirez, but he's not playing him, he's not starting him. and he's got Nias, who he's brought back in from the cold, who is a striker,
yeah.
And is an experienced striker. I mean, despite what I've said about him not scoring goals, I think he's in his late 20s
now. 27. Mm.
Yeah, so what is Koeman going to do? I mean, he's got all these players in there. He's got Rooney, Calvert-Lewin, Sigurdsson and Klaassen all playing in the same team at the same time. You'd argue at least two of those players are playing out of position. So I don't know what he's planning.
Well, he started with a back four rather than a back three. That was due
that
to injuries.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah.
With Keane and Jagielka. But that's what I was suggesting, because I thought to myself, when I saw the lineups, I thought, oh, he's been listening. But it was actually injuries. He did play back four, and that's what I feel that they should do. Then a midfield three with Gay and Schneiderlin behind, and Klaassen, because we were talking about Sigurdsson and Rooney, and so we forgot Davy Klaassen as well in there. You know, in that vying for that number 10 role. So Klaassen was playing in front of those two. Well, that's fine. And then there was Rooney, Calvert-Lewin and Sigurdsson in the front three. Now, Sigurdsson, it's going to be difficult to fit him in. Rooney, like I say, I think I'd like to see Rooney played in a kind of, to use a hipster term, false nine with maybe Calvert-Lewin on one of the wings, and then if Lookman can come back. I mean, really, yeah. It would be great if Bolasie wasn't injured.
Because you think they need pace in their team,
I
right?
do, yeah, because they don't have much pace. They don't have much width either. I'm losing
what about,
the ability to talk here.
What about Wayne Rooney's turning into the Terminator?
It was terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. Yeah. I don't know if there's any rule against wearing makeup when you're a professional footballer, but if I was Rooney, I'd have like fake blood streaming out of my eyes in every game. I was frightened watching it on TV. It was like it reached into my soul.
There was that South American defender who used to try and wear goth makeup, wasn't there?
That's right, yeah.
I don't know if he was able to get... I think he was playing like a South American lower division or something, so maybe you get away with it there. I don't even know if he got away with it on the pitch that often, but it's an interesting question. We should put that out there, isn't it?
Yeah, we certainly should.
Yeah, there should. I don't think there's anything in the FIFA laws of the game, to my knowledge, about it. Do you think Wayne Rooney noticeably became more frightening to the opposition?
Very much so, because he's very pale, isn't he? So that contrast was quite striking. He looked like he'd been directly lifted from a horror movie. Actually, Rushdie Rekbe used to wear
like American
grease paint, didn't he, on his
American football
face.
So. NFL, to stop the glare. What did you think about the incident that caused Wayne Rooney's injury?
Well, people might say that was a red card, mightn't they? Because he's endangering an opponent and so on.
Well,
so
quite,
forth.
Yeah. I mean, he's not looking at him, is he? So it doesn't look like there's malice in it, as we seem to have this conversation every single time. I mean, clearly it's caused him some harm, hasn't it?
Yeah, but we have this conversation with you, Jim, because you don't listen to what I say, which it doesn't matter if it's intentional or not. If he's putting his foot up there, it doesn't matter.
To be fair, I think Jim was talking on behalf of those misguided souls.
Yeah, well, possibly. I'm using Jim as an outlet here.
Apologise to Jim.
Right. Sorry, Jim.
I'll be your outlet, mate. But if, it's all right. I'll always be your outlet.
But if I walk down... that's just stupid. I was going to say something about a newborn baby getting kicked in the face.
Let's not do that.
Yeah. Nah, I couldn't think of a way a newborn baby would be on a football pitch, so I've sacked it off.
You've kicked the baby out of the bath.
Yeah, I have. I've overreacted there.
It's good that we've covered that definitively.
So no... assaulting people in the face.
No.
All right. And also as well, I think because Rooney's been back at Everton, he's been having a fairly nice time, you know. Forgot how...
A mixed bag off the pitch.
Well, okay. I'm talking about on the pitch.
That's the thing, Marcus. I think that sentence there sums up everything that's wrong with English football. It's all right, Jim. Don't worry about Everton's crisis, because Rooney's back at Everton and he's having a fairly nice time. And that's what we're all in for.
Yeah.
Koeman in his programme notes for the next game. I know we're not doing very well, but... Wayne has been having a fairly nice time.
Isn't it a lovely story?
Yeah.
Wayne's having a fairly nice time. Can we make him have a nicer nice time?
Yeah.
No, what I was going to say is that I'd forgotten what an angry face Wayne Rooney can pull.
Oh, God. Yeah, I enjoyed Match of the Day sort of like obscuring his swear words in the highlights. Yeah. Not during the highlights of the game, but in the analysis afterwards, strangely.
Occupational hazard.
And it's well after 9 o'clock.
I like the idea of Koeman doing a team talk of all the team apart from Rooney. And then he finishes his team talk and then he brings Rooney in and just sort of shuffles in a tracksuit with his head sort of down. Do it for him.
Yeah.
Make him have a nice time. That's why we're all in.
He really needs it right now.
Nias was the only one that responded to the call.
He was.
I tell you what, looking at some of the quotes that Nias said after the game, he sounded very humble and very professional. Mm. For a guy who... Perhaps his attitude was questioned by Koeman.
It's because Koeman's an absolute loose cannon.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to say anything before he finds himself on loan in a League One club.
I mean, he's very much been humbled, isn't he? No wonder he is.
Yeah.
I think he should offer Nias a long weekend in that Algarve mansion of his, you know.
Well, that's the last thing he needs.
Genuinely, could it just be that Nias is a very sort of basic functional striker and actually by accident rather than design, that is what the system that Koeman, you know, best has to play with suits?
I think it comes down to necessity. If I were a manager at the top level, I wouldn't like strikers that didn't score goals.
Yeah.
And Omar Nias doesn't really score goals really.
Don't be disrespectful. You've got to give Heskey and Count.
Well, I will. I will be disrespectful to them. And I have done for years. But Niasse's got a few goals already this season, and he has to be respected for that. But historically, he doesn't score goals, so it's not a huge stretch. It's like Occam's razor. The most obvious explanation.
Hey, when you say historically, did he not score a few in Russia? Perhaps I think he's done okay. Not in England, he's not scored hatful.
I mean, he played for two seasons at Lokomotiv Moscow and got 12 league goals across those two seasons.
Double figures.
Sorry, you're right. I apologise.
How many games was that Umar? In?
How many babies did he kick in the face?
Maybe that was his trouble, Jim.
You leave Marcus's Wayne out of this.
Oh, dear. I think we're going to have to go to a quick ad break, but we're going to talk about Liverpool and Brighton after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
It was like the parts in the Red Sea. People just went, whoop.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. It's now time for correspondence with Jim Campbell.
It certainly is. So, hey guys, you sometimes talk about possible changes in the rule of the game to make it more exciting, so I thought I'd contribute my idea.
Do we do that?
We drift across it sometimes.
Sometimes we get, I mean, a little bit over the top about because there's nothing happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's do it again.
It's not responsible for broadcasting.
This chap is introducing the idea encouraging our nonsense.
What's his name?
Okay, Faisal Bin Jamil.
Okay. Right, so, Faisal's always emailing.
He is.
Friend of the Ramble.
Exactly, there you go.
Carry on.
So Faisal says, what if, this is in reference to Jose Mourinho last week getting sent off for being on the pitch and our discussion of that. What if the managers were allowed onto the pitch at all points in the game with the sole rule of not being able to touch the ball or any players? Picture Tony Pulis screaming at a defender to get the tackle in, Conte on the corner of the TV screen hurling instructions to players, or Koeman legging it up the pitch to keep up with the counter-attack. Your thoughts? I'd enjoy that.
I'm for
Pulis, it. Pulis is absolutely the box office example there. That would be magnificent.
I'm for it, and it reminds me of an incident in the Bundesliga a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you guys saw it, where I think it was... Did Hoffenheim beat Bayern Munich?
Yeah, they did.
I'm pretty sure it was them. I don't know if you saw it, Jim, but there was a situation where Hoffenheim scored a goal, and at the time there was another ball on the pitch,
right?
And people were, I guess, Bayern Munich fans, and possibly even Bayern Munich players. In fact, I think a Bayern Munich player came out and said he wasn't aware that this was the rule, the law is apparently another ball can be on the pitch as long as the referee doesn't deem it to be interfering with play.
Right.
So technically, you could have footballs all over the pitch.
You could have multi-ball.
So maybe, I don't see why, if you can have that, why you can't have it with managers.
Yeah.
But then I suppose their definition of them being on the pitch, the very reason for it would be to interfere. But they can't touch.
Well, it's perhaps to encourage. You know, it's down to those managers to have that interpretation, isn't it? Maybe on a segue if they're getting older.
I love how we do like a good 25 minutes of decent football chat, and then we just completely undermine ourselves for the next 10.
Yeah. I would tell this chap to go and have a look at Notts County because Kevin Nolan's player manager there. They've just got to the top of the league.
Yeah.
And so if he wants managers on the pitch, well, the player manager is clearly what this man wants more of. And I think there's something that we all want. But unfortunately, the demands of the modern game, it's not as common as it was. Yeah. Think about it.
Game's gone, isn't it?
Think about this, right? Gianluca Vialli, right, great player in his day, was player manager for Chelsea. Yeah. Can you imagine Chelsea Football Club having a player manager now?
That would be great.
That's brilliant,
it's amazing, isn't it?
It really is great.
Think about that. It wasn't that long ago.
Glenn Hoddle was player manager at Swindon in the Premier League era as well. Is that
course
right?
He was.
I think possibly, maybe even in the first season.
I think was he not player manager for Chelsea?
He was definitely
player
manager for Swindon. I don't remember what division they're in, but he was player manager for them. Yeah,
yeah.
Swindon got promoted to the Premier League. I don't think he stuck around.
I think he might have played at Fratton Park, and they would have been second tier at the time. So right. I don't know if he did it in the top flight.
He was sweeper.
Even so,
well,
it's just a fascinating thing we seem to have lost.
I'd like it though if every time Palace had a set piece, Hodgson would run out and then arrange. Them like he does in training.
Yeah.
I think that would be wonderful to see.
It'd take him about 2 minutes to get on the pitch.
It'd be hilarious.
Yeah, segue.
Yeah, we've got to move on from this, Jim. we're undermining ourselves.
Right, yeah, allow me to segue. So, Dominic Foote's been in touch.
Footy.
Ramblers, about 15 years ago, me and my mate Andy visited the brilliant and beautiful city of Krakow and had an absolute ball. One evening, we decided to take in a game at the local club KS Krakowia. In a move that took us completely by surprise, during the halftime break, Aston Villa supporting violinist Nigel Kennedy was unveiled to a quite frankly uninterested crowd.
Right.
The crowd, and us to be fair, didn't know what to make of it as he stood in the centre circle with an Aston Villa scarf tied around his arm, shouted, "Go Krakowia!" then proceeded to play 10 minutes of music from his new album over an absolutely dreadful tannoy system. Public address system.
Yeah.
It was truly bizarre. I guess we will never know how many albums the famous fiddler sold as a result, but I can't help but think it was probably zero.
I'd love to think that the Polish people in the crowd, when he was doing his new album, they're going, "Old stuff!"
Yeah.
Play the hits.
Yeah. Well, we've got more on incongruous celebrities being unveiled at football teams in the Hearts of the week later. So
yeah, that's great. I've been to that stadium, but Nigel Kennedy wasn't there.
I'm pretty sure he's a bona fide Aston Villa fan.
Yeah, he's
I think
Villa
that's
fan,
what's
yeah.
in question.
No, he's probably doing a concert there or something. Wasn't he?
Yeah, it must have been something like that. But it's still a bizarre way to try and drum up a few extra ticket sales, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it as well. I endorse it.
Yeah,
so, got yet another one about
you got to keep your eye on Nigel Kennedy because he's always on the fiddle, Jim.
Yeah. He's got a lot of strings to his bow.
Yeah, very much so. So got some more of these bizarre unveilings.
Oh, lovely.
This is from Rick Fry. He says, on the recent talk of bizarre/tenuously linked football ground unveilings, I thought I'd reel off some of my favourites from being a West Ham season to get hold of for 20 years.
Oh, God. Strap yourself in.
Yeah. Right?
Is one of them Slaven Bilic?
No. I mean, there are some surprising ones in here, right? Elijah Wood, both during and post Green Street filming. That makes sense. But it's good, isn't it? That's a big one. Pixie Lott, last season performing your new single. Louisa Johnson, don't know who that is, sang at Mark Noble's testimonial, and this is a dig, not sure which bit is more laughable here, right?
Yeah.
£1 Fishman, remember the £1 Fishman who went viral?
Oh, the YouTube guy.
Yeah. So he appeared at halftime not only to be introduced but also to perform his viral hit £1 Fish. And Stone Cold Steve Austin at home to Fulham in the late noughties after being invited as a guest of Kieran Dyer's. He was unveiled at halftime, the reaction
amazing.
Being mixed with apathy and humour. That's from Rick Fry. That's magnificent, isn't it? Absolutely magnificent.
What a mixed bag.
That's fantastic. You keep those coming in.
Yeah.
I think show at thefootballround.com. That's great. We've got some more coming up in the highlights of the week, but I'll leave them in there for now.
Absolutely superb.
It's a rich seam to mine, that is. I think
we've sort of
I don't know who Louisa Johnson is.
I'm not sure, but I just like the Mark Noble dig, so I wanted to read it. Yeah. You'd think something like Stone Cold Steve Austin being unveiled at West Ham would be something just everyone remembers. There's so many of these that are so strange.
It's quite West Ham for a 20 year long season ticket holder to be having a pop at the captain for having a testimonial. I don't understand what the motivation for that is.
My goodness. But one of the games of the weekend was Leicester City at home to Liverpool. Cracking. Yeah. Enjoyable one from the King Power.
The reason that was one of the games of the weekend is because Simon Mignolet is a total liability.
He's great. He reminds me a little bit of when Gomez was in goal for Spurs. Now, Gomez is obviously in goal for Watford at the moment.
Yeah.
And
he's got the best penalty save ratio of any goalkeeper saving over 30 penalties.
You see, that's amazing. And that sort of feeds into my point because Gomez, when he was at Spurs, it was box office stuff. He was very, very erratic.
But Mignolet's got quite a good penalty record as well.
He does.
Yeah. I was watching Mignolet and goal for Liverpool in that game was like basically going to Covent Garden to watch a juggler. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Any place where there are street performers. But Philip Coutinho was back and he scored a beauty.
He did. And it was a pearler of a cross for the first goal too. That's really important to get him integrated as quickly
indeed.
As possible.
His head was obviously turned quite a lot, but it seems to have
Liverpool
been turned
released like correspondence with Barcelona and was shown to be telling the truth about the whole situation. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that Barcelona kept, well, not a lot, but some of the Barcelona stuff that they claimed was proven to not be true. So at Liverpool, it looks like play with a totally straight backwards. Coutinho, which was nice to see. But I'll tell you now, I don't want to get too dramatic about it, but this defending thing for Liverpool, that's going to do for Klopp.
Yeah.
Long term, that is going to do for him. And we said on Friday's show, all of us in this room now said, they need to score three goals to win a game. Mm-hmm. And what's happened?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they only
happened.
Just did it because of the penalty save.
Exactly.
Who would have thought Mignolet would be saint and saviour that day? But
he wasn't saint and saviour. At very best, they are neutral. At best, he is neutral there. he's flapped at one for one of their goals.
Yeah.
That penalty was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, he gave it away, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
And very bad. He could have been sent off there. You see that?
Could have broken the guy's pelvis.
What I've done.
It's Jamie Vardy. You can't break Jamie Vardy.
True, yeah. What I've done is I've isolated that incident. I've obviously been. There's been a lot of propaganda from the Mignolet PR machine, and it's affected my brain.
Which you're vulnerable to.
Indeed, yeah. I think I was the only one at that hearing. Yeah. But the thing is with Liverpool now is Klopp will not be able to wait for January's window to open up, right? The difficult thing for Klopp and Liverpool is everybody knows that they're terrible at defending.
Yeah.
So when they go in for Van Dijk or whoever it may be this time, they'll be held to ransom.
The great thing with Liverpool, though, from a neutral point of view, is they are really chaotic at the back, but they're also devastating on the counter. Oh. So it just makes them so much fun to watch.
But you can't counter-attack if you actually concede. It starts with the centre circle again.
Well, this is I think I made this point last time round with Manchester City. Manchester City obviously have got a better defence than Liverpool. You know, you look at the personnel, it would suggest that.
They keep clean sheets at the moment.
But they keep clean sheets, and also they've got a decent keeper by the looks of things, but also they're so devastating going forward. They just pin the opposition back, so they don't have to worry. I mean, you remember when Guardiola was in charge of Bayern Munich and obviously Barcelona, as we often mention, sometimes they play with like two at the back. I mean, it was essentially sort of a 2-5-3 or whatever the maths behind that is.
But Liverpool can't do that.
Whereas Liverpool can't do that, and they're great going forward. And Mo Salah, you've already mentioned, is among the goals.
He's been one of my favourite players to watch going forward in the whole league this season.
Yeah, but I just wonder that the Liverpool back line, are they getting enough protection?
No.
Well, no,
the answer is no.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
and they're also not very good themselves. Yeah. So it's quite a potent combination.
Well, if they're not that great, you need to protect them, and that is the problem, that they are able to be got
but
at.
They play Chan, Henderson and Wijnaldum in front of the back four against Leicester.
Yeah,
okay. And Lovren, I mean, I don't think Klopp wants to play Lovren in the Premier League. Every time he seems to play him, he seems to make a mistake. He's used him a lot more in Europe. Mm. I know they had, I think they might have had availability issues with injury and stuff. Mignolet, I mean, Mignolet is not good enough. We talked a couple of weeks ago about Mignolet. It felt to me like he adjusted his role a little bit, and he'd been given a bit of a narrower remit not to do crazy stuff. But then this game, it seemed like he's off his line. He should have stayed on his line for that penalty. When he gave the penalty away, he flapped for their other goal. I think it was their other goal.
The first goal.
The first goal, yeah.
Again, like aside from Mignolet, that was just another chaotic set piece that led to them conceding.
But he's not even picking Mignolet consistently. I mean, he picked Karius the other week, didn't he? Without any real explanation. I just think Klopp, because this has now become a media-driven thing, that this could do for Klopp long term. I'm not trying to get dramatic and say I think he's a good manager, and I think hopefully he'll be successful there because I think he's good in the Premier League. But I think long term that it has to be sorted out because everyone knows about it. They've conceded the most goals in the top half, even including Watford, who got spanked 6 by Man City.
Yeah.
So
they were back to winning ways.
It's worrying times for them.
Yeah, worrying times for Leicester, Jim. I mean, they've 4 points from 6 games. They've had a few difficult matches, but they do need to start winning games. They've got Bournemouth, West Brom, and Swansea next. So they are winnable games, and they are scoring goals. They scored a few goals against Arsenal. They scored obviously a couple against Liverpool. I might have had another one had Vardy not have been a bit predictable with his penalties if you look at them. But what do you think of Leicester?
I think the thing with Leicester is, you know, they, despite, you know, them having lost a few games and not having as many points on the board as you might think, they've looked confident in pretty much every game they've played, and they have played well. And I just think they will start picking up.
They'll get their slice of luck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're sort of set, readjusting to the level that you would expect them from them now. Like obviously, the insane title-winning season and the relegation scare last season, which was you know, a knock-on effect of how bizarre that whole situation was. I think they will be a sort of solid mid-table team for a while. They're in that phase, and I think we're going to start to see that from them a bit more soon.
And now they've not got Champions League football this year. They can concentrate on the league.
Yeah, exactly.
I might be wrong, but off the top of my head, the only game I can think of them not actually competing that well was the Man United game.
Yeah.
Pretty badly outclassed, weren't they, I think, from memory. But other than that, I think Jim's right.
Well done, Jimbo. Let's go down to Brighton. They got themselves a priceless win against Chris Hughton's old club. It's always pleasing for Chris Hughton, isn't it, when they beat Newcastle because of the way he was treated there. it's always worth reminding everybody. But
get the digs in before Pete gets back.
Well,
Pete would join in.
If anything, we've taken the foot off the gas.
I didn't actually see this game. You're going to have to excuse me here.
Not at all. Tomer Hemed got the goal, and he's led the line well for Brighton so far. He could be in trouble.
He's just been charged by the FA. About an hour ago.
Well, he stamped on DeAndre Yedlin, and they're going to lose him for three matches now. Now Brighton might struggle a little bit because he has led the line. They tried to get Vincent Janssen in the summer, but the deal didn't go through.
Well, he scored at the weekend in the big Istanbul derby, didn't he?
Five men sent off. Ryan Barbell was also among
the
goals.
We should cover that on the continent this week.
That looks amazing. Glenn Murray, who's picked up an injury already this season, he says he wants to make up for lost time in the Premier League. He didn't feature against Newcastle. I think Murray is fit now, so he could come in there playing for Brighton, of course. But
who else have they got? Isaiah Brown. That's it.
They're a bit light up front. This is the point. But they did get a big win, and I think the supporters know that every point and every 3 points in the Premier League is huge. You saw people talking about Brighton being like an FA, a cup final kind of atmosphere. They were very nervy towards the end of the match.
Luke, your man Pascal Gross put in a fantastic ball that ended up leading to the goal, and he and Knockhart have got that. They've got those little bits of quality that might nick you a point or edge you a win, and I think that's going to be a huge.
Gross is one of those players that the long-term Ramble listeners will know that I'll bore every listener about now for the rest of the season, because I said at the start of the season I saw him play. He looks like a player who can do a bit of everything, and he's settling into Premier League life now. Knockhart's a great player anyway. I don't know why I called Izzy Brown Isaiah Brown. I feel like a bit like one of his parents.
Fine, like you're telling him off.
Sadly, I am old enough to be one of his
DJ, but it was a good win for Brighton nonetheless.
Well, they just need to stand the league, don't they? Basically,
that's exactly it. Newcastle put a bit of pressure on them at the end. Jonjo Shelvey made a difference when he came, nearly scored from a corner.
It's rare Jonjo won't get a mention. From Spelvey.
This is the thing with Jonjo, though, isn't it? It's quite often nearly scores from a corner or nearly scores from the halfway line,
or gets sent off or says something.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's all box office mad stuff. Yeah.
The universe almost has to write itself whenever Jonjo Shelvey does something quite good, and they'll just do something horrific,
absurd,
to make up with it. Yeah,
it's a bit.
And by the way, bearing in mind, we are actually talking about him nearly scoring it, not even the match
from a corner.
Yeah, well, it didn't happen though, did it? Yeah.
No, but it's still quite impressive.
If you nearly score from a corner, you've just taken a corner.
Yeah.
Well, all right then. Yeah. Fair enough. Yosselu missed a great chance.
He'll do that. And Hesse didn't play very well against Chelsea, either, did he?
That smile on your face. Yes,
yeah, the other side of the Pascal Gross coin,
didn't you? You told us.
I just remember our distinct lack of tweets from everyone this weekend. That's all. Yeah,
a win's a win's a win.
Yeah.
Brighton player Steve Sidwell is currently out injured. He was telling tales of a one Felix Magath when he was at Fulham. This was on Radio 5 Live. Yeah, Sidwell currently sidelined. Should be back in about 6 weeks, hopefully, and that would be a plus for Brighton, of course.
He's evergreen, isn't he, Steve Sidwell?
He is. Yeah. Still very sprightly.
How old is he now? Do you know?
Is he 34?
Yeah,
must be around that.
In his 30s. Yeah. Ex-Chelsea man, of course.
Yeah.
Strange to think that.
Ex-Arsenal as well.
That is even stranger.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. Ex-Real Madrid as well. You wouldn't think that. You know that. Yeah. One particular story that he told about Felix Magath at Fulham was when Fulham had a poor result on the road. Some of you would have heard this, of course. And Felix Magath called the lads into training the next morning at 8 a.m. on their day off. Now, that's annoying for players.
Yeah.
But if the manager feels that they need a bit of a whipping, then obviously he feels that's what they need to do. Sidwell said that Al Felix asked the players to line up in the positions on the training field, so they got into their formation, probably 4-4-1-1 or something like that. And then Felix said, because you didn't want to run around yesterday, you're not going to run around today. Blew his whistle and they just stood in silence for what Sidwell reckoned was about 40 minutes.
That's amazing.
He said there were some players with gloves on and Felix was like, you can get them off right now. It's a cold day.
40 minutes standing still doing nothing must seem like an absolute age.
Sidwell was saying you were like trying to look at other players out the corner of your eye, trying to get eye contact, but nobody was. They were all looking forward in the formation. He said Magath was walking around the pitch every now and then, stand around, have a look around, and then walk a bit.
That is brilliant.
I would have just gone into my office and a cup of tea.
This is a man who won the Bundesliga title not that long ago.
Managed Bayern Munich.
Yeah,
you know that bringing players in the next day after a defeat. I once heard a really fascinating bit from Sir Clive Woodward, the guy, the coach who won the Rugby World Cup in 2003. And he said that he never understood that. And so when he was coaching, he flipped reversed that. When his team had a really good win, he would bring them in the next day instead to really extend that feel good factor. Mm-hmm. And if they had a really bad result, he would actually give them a day off unannounced to get it out of their system. So Clive Woodward, who's a very sort of successful coach in his own sport, interestingly enough, thinks that you should do totally the opposite to that.
Like you're trying to instill some sort of team spirit.
I know, right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Did you hear the Breda Hangeland story as well that was doing the rounds?
Rubbing the cheese on his leg.
Yeah, but it wasn't just
that.
But it sort of surfaced again now. Right. But apparently he had a dead leg, and Felix Magath said, he had treatment he was going to have. I think he was going to have some blood drained from it by the club physio or something. And apparently there was a new system where Magath said that he'd have to rub cheese on his leg and then call his mother because the love he felt for his mum and something in the cheese would create a reaction that would help him heal quicker.
Working in professional sport.
Won the Bundesliga.
I was going to say, this is a weird thing.
Blind squirrels are nuts, in my opinion.
That's a hell of a nut to stumble upon, isn't it, though? My goodness, is it not the only honest story we heard on radio recently? I didn't hear this, of course. I read about this. Perhaps some of our listeners will be au fait with Happy FM in Ghana.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A joyous listener, I'm assuming. Well, this was very, very interesting indeed, because Alhaji Babagedo, the president of second tier Amadeus Professionals in Ghana, again, a team that we're all very familiar with.
It's a great name for a team.
He was discussing some refereeing standards and whatnot. And refereeing standards will always be discussed no matter what league you go, no matter which country, so on and so forth. And then here was a man who, as I say, he's the president of a second tier side. So he's got a bit of standing in the game, a bit of importance, and you think, I wonder what...
I sense you might be building up the same game, mate.
I used to pay countless fat bribes to referees.
Oh my God. Here we go.
Not just skinny ones, fat bribes.
Let me put my seatbelt on. Now I'm ready.
But I've stopped now. That's good.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because I didn't benefit from it.
Oh, right. Okay.
You sort of popped yourself on the moral high ground.
Has he found that other people are bribing more?
Well, he went on to say, you pay the bribe and the referee will still go ahead and rob you, which means he also collected a bribe from your opponents. That's what pissed me off.
You've got no cause to complain.
Yeah, he occupied the moral high ground and went tumbling back into the valley.
He did occupy the moral high ground.
His opening gambit is, I used to pay them fat bribes. Yeah. But clearly other teams paid them fatter bribes.
I'd like to know what world you're living in, Marcus, where owning up to an actual crime is occupying the moral high ground.
The best you can offer is that he's been honest, but he's only being honest about his own dishonesty.
Yeah, that's
because he's nowhere for him to go.
Because it didn't work.
And it's pissed him off.
Yeah.
What am I to do?
Yeah. More of this guy.
Oh, I feel not sorry for him.
No.
My goodness, yeah. Well, that's a wonderful admission there. We're going to talk about some local derbies after this.
If I had 99 more England caps, I'd have had 100.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Do not forget the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Friday, and our man in the hot seat got his bet spot on.
Yes. Step in, James Short.
Go on, Jamesy.
Step back into the fold, into the Ramble bosom. You're still in the hot seat. Those of you keen-eared enough to remember will know that James tipped Watford and Man United to win both away from home, and they did. Watford bounced back, and Man United beat Southampton at Southampton, as we talked about last week. Southampton can't score at home, and so it came to pass again.
Watford was a very late winner as well.
Yes, James Short has raised £263 for Prostate Cancer UK.
Go on, Jamesy.
Same again on Friday, please. I look forward to what is better the week's going to be on Friday with Bet365.
It'd be great if he can get a double, because we haven't had a hat-trick yet. Yeah. Some, including our own Luke Moore, were very close.
Yeah, I tumbled down.
Yeah, but you went for it. Like I say,
you went big.
Yeah. You tried
honourable
to get...
effort.
And then I went home.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff. In Sheffield, we saw the Steel City derby between Wednesday and United back after about 5 years or 6 years, was it? United have been out of the Championship.
I sort of lobbied for this to go in purely because I really want to take the opportunity to say that Chris Wilder has done an absolutely incredible job as a manager. I mean, the thing is, he's not like a new up and coming young, well, I suppose he's sort of new, but he's not a young up and coming manager. Mm. So I believe as a Sheffield United fan, he's living the dream now.
Oh, yeah.
But everywhere he's been, he's done a fantastic job. So he got Oxford United promoted back into the Football League. Mm. He absolutely walked League Two with Northampton Town when Portsmouth were in it as well. They were by head and shoulders above anything else in that league. And now he's doing an absolutely superb job at Sheffield United. They've just beaten Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough 4-2 in the Steel City Derby, as you just mentioned. And they've got a really good chance of being promoted into the Premier League this season. Which,
that's a bold shout, Luke.
I think they have got, just because I think he's such a good manager. They're fourth in the league. And they're 2 points off the top.
Didn't they? I mean, they came up from the Championship last season.
Yeah, that's what.
So you're saying two promotions in a row? I mean, that would be something.
To finish off how good Chris Wilder's managerial career has been, last season they got Sheffield United promoted back into the second tier, and now they're absolutely flying again.
I mean, that would be remarkable. And do you know what? I'd love to see that happen.
I would too, and I'd love to hear from some Sheffield Wednesday fans about how Carlos Carvajal's doing, because I've heard a few rumblings that he might be for the chop soon. We don't have to see that, but they've just not started very well by their own standards.
I mean, they've been close under him.
They have been close, and I think that's the problem. I think
some are saying that they, in the big games, they struggle a little bit.
Stagnation there.
Mm. Yeah,
I love the Steel City Derby, though. It's one of those games where the atmosphere is always amazing. It's like it adds a yard of pace to every player on the pitch.
Yeah,
that's what a derby should do, shouldn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
The first goal was a belter, by the way.
It's the sort of game that that someone like Kevin Nolan shouldn't be anywhere near.
Kevin Nolan?
Yeah, do you remember when he was captain in West Ham when they played Millwall and he got sent off after about five minutes?
Sorry,
yeah.
I was thinking Sheffield Derby.
It's that type of game. You know
did
I mean?
He do a glum version of his chicken dance as he went down the tunnel? Oh, I can't remember. I assume
look,
he did.
That man is currently top of...
I'm going to say yes.
The currently top of the division that he's in. Yeah. Crying out loud. Get off his back, eh?
Yeah, he can't do any more.
Notts County, very well.
Are you about to bring Chris Sutton into the mix-up?
Well, via the old firm, darling.
I think, yeah, Chris Sutton's about to be brought into the mix-up a minute.
Chris Sutton was involved in the mix-up.
Oh, dear. There, Brendy Rodgers got himself another Old Firm win at Ibrox. Celtic unbeaten in 57 domestic matches. The way they're going, it'll be 100 soon enough. Although, will Rodgers still be there? You know, by the time they get...
Well,
got
I had a really good chat with on the radio last week about this, about how Brendan Rodgers clearly... I mean, Celtic are a really big club. We all know that. Yeah. European Cup winners and all the rest of it. And you know, they've achieved a great deal in football. And no one's in any doubt about that. But there is an element in modern football when you agree as a manager, an ambitious manager, to take a job north of the border. Certain amount of a deal with the devil that comes along with that, because people might try and denigrate your achievements. Mm. They might not take it quite as seriously had you have been successful in the Premier League, for example. But Rodgers is quite an ambitious, and for ambitious, do read, egocentric man. And so you can understand why he wanted to go there, because they're such a big club.
Yes.
But the reason we had the conversation on the radio was because we were sort of debating whether people in England think that he's achieved enough, or whether it would count for anything, and whether he's achieved such a great deal that people in Scotland think he has. And you've got experience of growing up in Scotland and supporting football in England as well. So do you think he will get a bigger job back in England? Because if it wasn't for the Liverpool thing, I could see him popping up at someone like Everton. Probably nowhere bigger than that. Yeah, but it wouldn't be outrageous to have a club the size of Everton being managed by him, would it?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I don't know about Rodgers. I think this is actually a little bit different with regards to what he's achieved at Celtic, because if you look at some managers who've gone to Celtic, I know he wasn't a British manager, but Ronnie
Daler,
that's how you pronounce it, sorry. I mean, he was pretty rubbish, let's be honest, and Celtic still won the league fairly handedly. You know, they don't need that much coaching. But what Rodgers is doing at Celtic is they're playing great football.
Yeah.
And actually,
they are dominating.
They are completely dominating.
I know it's against PSG, but they got pumped in the Champions League. Absolutely.
I think, I mean, they're playing against PSG, but you're right. I think that is...
That's the measure, though, is it not?
That will probably be what Rodgers will be measuring against himself,
is
the Champions League. And if Celtic can have a good Champions League campaign, which they have done, Martin O'Neill, has a good experience of that with Celtic, then they'll be able to do something. I think, though, that people will see the way Celtic play, you know, the way he's got Scott Sinclair playing again and all that kind of stuff. It is an achievement, and I think it's a bit of a shame, because Celtic are such a massive club, as you say. The difficulty for Rodgers, though, and I think Gordon Strachan may have said this when he managed Celtic, he sort of said afterwards, now he did go on, and I think he managed Middlesbrough, and obviously now at Scotland, and maybe one or two others, I can't quite remember, but he said, after Celtic, where'd you go?
Yeah.
And it's difficult, because there you are, playing in front of, you know, 60,000, something like that, a passionate support, you know, a club with a rich history and a fantastic support. You know, it's an amazing club, one of the biggest in the UK easily. But unfortunately, your achievements aren't
they're maybe not recognised enough for you to be able to have a step up. Is that fair?
Yeah, sure, yeah. But I think with Rodgers, I think this is different, because someone like Gordon Strachan, I think it was always going to be a sort of, at the very best, a sideways step. And in terms of quality, you could say a club challenging for sort of mid-table in the Premier League would be a sideways step or something like that. But I think Rodgers will be okay. I really do.
I think it'll be what?
Oh. I think it'll be okay.
What about that Chris Sutton tackle, though?
Come on. We've got to mention the game, though.
Let's get into the real stuff. Okay.
Well, all right. Just quickly. Okay. Celtic, they were absolutely brilliant. They dominated, and they're just a cut above Rangers at the moment. Rangers can't get anywhere near them. But there was a moment for... Well, I was going to say the Rangers fans to save, and it was another moment for the Celtic fans to save.
It was just enjoyable. It was just
when one of their players accidentally went in overzealously to the ball, and he managed to upend his manager, Pedro Caixinha. Yeah. And this was recreated on BT Sport. Yeah. Chris Sutton was walking around the pitch at Fir Park, just reflecting on the weekend's action, and former Motherwell player Stephen Craigan, in his shirt and trousers. That's what I love about this.
What I love about
it... Came out of nowhere.
What I love about it is that clearly... Chris Sutton was in on it,
yeah,
and it was a staged thing.
Yeah.
But then what Stephen Craigan did is he went in so hard that Chris Sutton just wasn't prepared for how hard it was going
to
hit him.
I can tell you from the experience of Pete doing exactly this to me last season, that still hurts.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah, Chris Sutton slide tackled on live television, but it was perfect. Oh.
Like it was great to watch. It was very, very satisfying. We've had our ups and downs with old Chris Sutton, giving him a bit of stick. I like to think we give everyone a bit of stick, really, don't we? I've got no problem with Chris Sutton, really. But it was still very, very satisfying to watch. It would have been satisfying to watch if it was anyone.
It's just funny because you know it's going to annoy him so much. It's going to there's probably no one else you could do that prank on that would annoy them anywhere near as much.
When I first saw it, I didn't think, oh my goodness, that's that stage. I thought, that is absolutely hilarious. Yeah. Or Chris Sutton's really pissed him off.
Yeah.
And Craig has gone, I'm just going to go for it, you know. Yeah. Whereas, of course, in Switzerland, that did happen. Did you see this one?
Yeah.
The president of Sion. Is it Sion?
Yeah, FC Sion.
FC Sion.
It used to be managed by Gennaro Gattuso, did they not?
Oh my goodness,
I believe they didn't.
An ill-fated.
And they're still there.
Yeah. An ill-fated reign, that was. Yeah, Christian Constantin. He was very angry with a commentator and former Switzerland national team manager, Rolf Fringer. So he attacked him. This was, during a, I don't know if it was during a match or if it was during a stop of play or something, but it was certainly in the stadium. And apparently Fringer had criticised Constantin earlier in the week. So the president of this club went over, gave him a bit of slap and around, pushed him over and said, now I've sorted that out. I grabbed him and kicked him in the backside. When you're attacked, you have to defend yourself.
Yeah, we've got to be careful because we don't want to incur the wrath of someone like that if we're a bit too rude.
Well, I love the fact that the irony here of Constantin saying, when you are attacked, you have to defend yourself.
Just attacking a man. Maybe this is advice to his victim.
If Fringer had a
victim. Oh, you got.
I don't. Let's not get in the ins and outs of it. Let's go to the highlights of the week. We'll look more.
Yeah, we'll do a few quick ones because I think we're coming up to the end of our time here, aren't we? So I'll try and squeeze a few in. Joshua Milton. Hi, Joshua. He says, my highlight of the weekend was Tranmere manager Mickey Mellon claiming Wrexham playing with 10 men for 77 minutes actually made the game harder for us. Unsurprisingly, this is not the same stance he had on the occasion we've had a player sent off. Tranmere Rovers, of course, are down near the bottom of the National League, sadly, at the moment. Sam Cooper, I'm a poor student who streams most of his games, and before the Brighton-Newcastle match, I was treated to a panel of Keys, Gray and Ali McCoist. Pre-match analysis included Keys' disliking of modern kits, some Brighton facts gathered off Wikipedia, and how hard it is to be a mascot. Safe to say, I will never be watching that again. When I read that, I thought, sounds quite similar to the ramble, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's fairly similar. Oliver Memories Bailey.
Yeah,
here he is again.
He did a big Facebook comment about how pleased he was to be announced as a friend of the ramble, but it's way too long, so I'm not reading it out.
Yeah. He's not a friend anymore.
No, you've relinquished. we're going to take that back. Yeah. Tom Whitaker, incongruous celebrities at football matches. So based on what we were talking earlier, a bit more of an extension on that, Burnley's Turf Moor has been graced by such luminaries as Big Brothers. Remember them?
Oh, spelt Big Bro Vaz.
This is Big Bro taking over the show. That was them, wasn't it?
I think you got the melody wrong, but yeah, that was
and
it.
And the X Factor's Chico.
Right. Chico time.
It was Chico time. Particularly enjoyed Chico's rendition of It's Chico Time, during which he cleverly changed the words to It's Burnley Time. Somehow, though, we avoided a points deduction from the Football League.
Was it Chico Sanchez Flores?
No, I don't think so, yeah, no.
Allardyce just laughing.
And Steve Barron, just chiming in on what we're talking about. We touched on earlier. 11 yellow cards, 5 red cards, and 2 penalties in the Fenerbahce Besiktas match in Turkey. And guess what? Pepe didn't even get booked.
What?
Yeah. I know. He's let himself down there. Before we go, actually, final mention on just a quick mention on the Gerry Barton, Kevin Keegan story from last week.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people got in touch to say that Barton was actually sent off at half time, so there's no way Keegan could have feasibly seen it. I don't care.
But like, that makes it even
better.
None of us care.
The fact is, Keegan gets his players in at half time and goes, right, tactically, I know what we're doing, blah, blah, blah. And a man gets sent off after the whistle.
Yeah.
No other manager has that.
It's great.
Oh, marvellous stuff. Any more for any more?
That is everything.
We are done, of course, until the preview show on Friday, or on the continent on Wednesday if European football floats your football.
You have to subscribe to that separately, so check on the continent on iTunes. It's Marcus, myself, James Horncastle and Andy Brassel every week covering the biggest stories from European football. Search on the continent from wherever you get your podcast.
It's a beautiful listen.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.